Topics you care about by people you trust. This is The Clear Perspective, your healthcare cybersecurity, compliance, and privacy podcast. And now for the show.
Welcome to The Clear Perspective, Clearwater's podcast that discusses emerging trends and best practices for cybersecurity and compliance in the healthcare industry. I'm Steve Cagle. I'm the CEO of Clearwater Security and Compliance. In today's podcast, we'll discuss key factors driving cyber attacks in healthcare and how to both change leadership's mindsets about cyber risks and gain support for advancing cybersecurity programs. I'm joined today by two legends in healthcare cybersecurity and compliance, Mac McMillan and Bob Chaput. Mac McMillan is the co-founder and now retired CEO of Synergistic, who Clearwater merged with in September of 2022. Mac has over 40 years of experience in information security and cybersecurity, and he was previously the director of security for two defense agencies prior to founding Synergistic. Mac has served on numerous industry associations. He's also been on numerous boards and has been a thought leader at numerous conferences during his career. He's a recipient of multiple awards, including the Chime Foundation Industry Leader Award and the Malcolm Baldrige Foundation Award for Leadership Excellence in Cybersecurity. Mac, it's great to have you here today.
Steve, good to be here.
Bob Chaput is the founder and current executive chairman of Clearwater. Bob has served the healthcare industry for over four decades in IT and security, and he's held leadership roles at GE, Johnson & Johnson, and Healthways prior to founding Clearwater. His first book, Stop the Cyber Bleeding, What Healthcare Executives and Board Members Must Know About Enterprise Cyber Risk Management, has become a go-to resource for healthcare leaders and directors. He expects his second book, Enterprise Cyber Risk Management as a Value Creator, Leverage Cybersecurity for a Competitive Advantage, to be published in December. It's great to have you here too, Bob.
Appreciate it.
And I know both of you are old friends who've been in this industry for many years together, and you have many shared experiences. So this ought to be a fun discussion for our audience today. Why don't we begin today by discussing some of the recent trends that we've been seeing in cybersecurity across the healthcare industry. And I think it's fair to say that the healthcare industry overall has made improvements to security over the last decade. Many thanks to both of you for a lot of that. But despite these improvements, here we are in 2023 on pace to far exceed 2022 in successful cyber attacks and breaches in healthcare. And just to put some data behind that, through the end of September of this year, healthcare organizations have reported 513 breaches totaling almost 90 million records as breached, compared to 719 breaches all of last year, with only 55, and I say only, but relatively speaking, only 55 million records. And we've seen not only the breaches of electronic protected health information, but also ransomware attacks that have really crippled hospitals, physician practice management groups, digital health companies, service providers that provide critical services to healthcare entities. So all this has unfortunately been increasing, not decreasing. And Mac, I'll turn it to you first. Why do we continue to see these numbers increasing, and why are cyber attacks continuing to plague the industry as they do?
Sure. You know, Bob and I have seen these numbers for two decades, and they just seem to be getting worse over time instead of going the other direction. In my mind, there's three reasons for that. One of them is environmental. One of them is what I call appreciation. The third one is threat motivation. And the first one, environmental. I think everybody knows that healthcare has probably one of the most difficult and complex threat postures that any industry has in terms of its attack surface, numbers of systems, the data that it shares, the number of people that it's sharing that data with, the number of people that it's touching with its systems. I mean, it is no easy task to try to protect and secure everything that we're doing in the typical healthcare environment, let alone a very complex environment. And that's not getting any simpler. It's continuing to get more complex and more complicated as time goes on, with new technologies that are emerging on a regular basis and things that are happening in the environment. And there's three parts to that, right? There's the business that's dynamic. There's the threat that's dynamic. There's the technology that's dynamic. It's just all those things are constantly changing and constantly evolving. And that makes the environment very difficult. On top of that, I think you have what I call a lack of appreciation. And what I mean by that is we're not responding the way we should to the threat still today. I'm speaking directly to leaders of these organizations. Because the fact of the matter is, we're still not investing enough in cybersecurity. We're not hiring enough of the right people to be able to combat the problem. Simply buying technology and throwing it at it is never going to solve this problem. It's just that simple. Somehow, at some point, we need to gain an appropriate appreciation for how bad this problem is or how big this challenge is. And then we need to address it properly as the business issue that it really represents. And then the last thing is the threat motivation. The threat is well aware of what our environment looks like. They're well aware of what's going on in our environment with respect to change and applications and things that are being added, et cetera, et cetera. They know that we are, for the most part, a fairly easy target. And they're taking advantage of that. And they're going to continue to take advantage of that because they're criminals, plain and simple. They're coming after money. They're coming after data, which they can turn into money or monetize. And they're not going to stop coming. It's just that simple. So I think those three things for me are why we're seeing the numbers that we're still seeing. Frankly, unless we have a real sea change in the industry with respect to how it's addressing the problem, I'm not real optimistic that we're gonna see a change in that.
Mac, if I may, I think that's very, very well said. I would simply add the breach data is interesting and it continues to go up. But the real seriousness where the rubber meets the road is when these attacks turn into life or death matters. And I'm optimistic and I'm hopeful and sorry that it's taken some of those events to get us to the point where there's more attention being paid to this. But I'm personally suffering from a little bit of breach fatigue and hope that what's been happening, especially with these Russian-backed sanctioned attacks, that we're on the verge of hopefully a sea change in this regard. From the beginning of the pandemic, when these launched, here we have an already limping collection of hospitals and health systems now subject to these vicious attacks that have threatened patients' lives, obviously. So I think you're spot on in what you observed there.
Yeah, and I know this is something that, Mac, for a long time you've talked about, is the need to invest more. It's a changing environment, becoming more complex. It's more targeted. You know, I think there's been an attitude for a long time about doing the minimum, checking the box. Bob, as you said many times, you have to go beyond checking boxes, beyond being compliant with HIPAA or other regulations. You've spoken very, very openly, very passionately for as long as I've known you about the potential harm, you just touched upon it now, that can occur to patients because of a breach, because of a ransomware, and the need for healthcare organizations to consider that patient safety risk. And you know, I think there's alignment there with CEOs and boards, those that we really need to get the attention of to get that investment, that patient safety is a top priority. I don't think anybody at the board or CEO level would argue that, and clinicians would certainly feel that they're responsible for that. Let's dig into that a bit, Bob. I mean, what's the impact that breaches and ransomware really can have on patient safety?
There's a growing body of data, as I think you know, Steve, and you know, Mac, as well. Ransomware attack, there's a correlation, at least, if not a causation connection between ransomware attacks and increased mortality rates. We've seen in certain circumstances studies where there's a ransomware attack, the impact on other hospitals and health systems in the area. I mean, that came out pretty loud and clear with the Scripps of that. The FBI is now at the point of investigating cyber attacks from the perspective of these being threats to human life. But there's something here that I think is really important. I want to come back to the old classic confidentiality, integrity, availability. The big problem here, and many people observe that patient safety is where we're going to connect to the C-suite and the board. But in too many cases, we're saying it's probably going to resonate as a top priority and probably is the wrong thing. There's not enough accountability in healthcare today when it comes to this issue. As compared, and everyone knows the majority of hospitals and health systems are not for profit, may or may not have a religious affiliation, but in the majority, they're not for profit. As a result of that, board members, trustees are not subject to derivative lawsuits, for example, that may emanate, as they did, out of cases like Target and Equifax, et cetera. So being free from these derivative lawsuits is sort of, notwithstanding the fact that any board member in any organization has fiduciary responsibilities, we're not seeing that being picked up. So let me go back to the question of the harm. Think about a three-dimensional rubric for a moment, if you will, and I draw it as a three-dimensional cube. When it comes to healthcare, three core tenets: timely care, access to care, and quality care. And then our anchor in security, confidentiality, integrity, availability. And if you're following my cube, the last dimension is combine that with the data and systems and devices, the explosive growth that we have in all those areas. And if you think about confidentiality, integrity, availability in a moment, whether it's an attack or whether it's a breach, an impermissible disclosure, in the case of confidentiality, you may have an individual suffer reputational damage, relationship damage, let's say STI information is revealed. In the case of a compromise of integrity, somebody changes one's medical record, blood type, could result in an incorrect diagnosis, incorrect treatment. And obviously, in the case of compromise of availability, the ransomware scenario in today's world, that's where we have delayed admissions, delayed diagnoses, delayed surgery. So, I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the bad things that can come about as a result of these compromises.
You know, you and I both have been on boards. We've advised boards. What's really interesting is that oftentimes when I've been in front of a hospital board, when you look at the board members, right, they're typically leaders in the community. They're people that live in that community and sit on the board for that particular health system, unless it's a major national player. So they have a vested interest in how well that hospital performs or whether or not that hospital performs and what happens there. And yet, all too often, they don't have somebody on that board that can ask the right kind of questions, or they don't have those discussions. As you know, in the public sector, it's required, right? You have to have somebody on the board now. And CEOs and CFOs in the public sector have to sign their 8Ks that they've addressed cybersecurity and that they haven't had any breaches this quarter. That kind of gets people's attention. And plus, there's fiduciary responsibility there. You know, I think part of the issue is that the boards really need to take a more active role, and they need to understand that this is a community asset, and it is, and they need to treat it that way. And they need to know, is this asset going to be there when I need it or when the people of this community need it? And that's really what their responsibility should be about. And I just don't think that conversation is had enough or in the depth that it needs to be had.
I couldn't agree more. And sadly, notwithstanding the SEC changes to which you alluded a moment ago that are going to require naming whether or not you have someone, not necessarily assuring that you have someone, but naming whether you do or not. Notwithstanding that, there are still, and it's applicable to publicly traded companies directly head on, in the nonprofit world, people are just tossing it right out the window. They're not paying any attention to that. I do think that's going to change, but I think you hit a key point. It all gets back to the matter of accountability, and we have a long way to go there.
Yeah, and patient safety risk, clearly extremely important, but there's also business risk here, right? There's cost to a breach, dollars and cents. And recently, the Poneman Institute released its annual cost of a breach report. This is a report that comes out every year now for 13 years. And for 13 years in a row, healthcare is the most expensive industry to have a breach in. Average cost now $10.9 million compared to $4.45 million in all other industries. You know, Mac, the big question we get a lot, right, is what's the ROI of doing risk analysis, of really understanding where risks are and doing that at a comprehensive level? And considering what we know, we just talked about the likelihood of these incidents happening, pretty likely, and the cost, and pretty high impact. You know, how would you address that question to a leader that says, hey, we don't have the money to go out and look for all of our risks?
Sure. And unfortunately, that's the place that a lot of CEOs and executive teams are in, right? They've got X number of dollars. They've got X number of initiatives and priorities that they're trying to trying to meet with those dollars. And then security raises its head and says, I need X number of dollars to protect the infrastructure. The way I've always addressed it, and I've tried to put it in a business sense, and I've tried to use factual data, because these are smart people. They're not going to respond well to what I call FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. You know, if you present them with enough facts, eventually, you know, at some point a light comes on and they say, okay, I maybe not be able to get all the way across the bridge, but I'm going to get closer to the other side in what I do. And so there's a lot of data out there today. And I think what everybody needs to do, and especially the CISOs that are out there practicing, they need to master that data. They need to understand what is happening in the industry and what it's costing the industry. And fortunately now, there are a lot of great examples. I mean, Scripps and UC San Diego did a great job of analyzing what that breach cost them. The hospital on the East Coast in North Carolina a few years back, the CFO there did a great job of analyzing the total cost of the breach. And I think that's the other part of this, is that when I talk to them, what happens is you find that they tend to be focused on the cost of the breach itself, meaning the response, the notifications, et cetera. And I'm like, that is not the real cost here, ladies and gentlemen. The real cost is the impact to the business. And I look at the CFO and I say, well, if you're down for 3 weeks, you can't bill, you can't do procedures, you got to divert patients, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You got to bring in extra people to get things done. You got to clean up afterwards. What's the total cost of the impact to the business of 3 weeks of darkness? And all of a sudden, those numbers go up exponentially. And they do go up exponentially, because that cost doesn't come back right away. And in some cases, it doesn't come back at all. Because if I need a procedure today and the hospital's down, I'm going to go to another hospital to get my procedure. You're not going to get that revenue back. It's just that simple. So there's a certain percentage of the revenue that doesn't come back. Elective surgeries, yeah, we can reschedule those if I'm willing to reschedule. But things that have to happen today, I've got to go somewhere else. That all costs. And when you start looking at the total cost, and I took the timeline the hospital in North Carolina put together, for the CFO put together, because it's a beautiful model that shows from 3 days prior to the breach occurring to over a year later when they finally got back to where they were 3 days before the breach occurred, and the cost to the hospital and what it meant to them, the total impact of that breach. When I have explained that or talked about that with the senior leadership at a health system or with a board, all of a sudden they listen, right? They listen. They've heard all the stories about threat. They read the news just like everybody else. What they really need is somebody to help them put it into really practical terms of what this costs to the business. And then they listen.
Yeah. And I think it's fair to say also that, I mean, there are organizations that are doing a good job. We know a lot of them that are doing a great job of assessing risk. They're responding to those risks. They're doing it on an ongoing basis. I mean, it is required to do that under the HIPAA security rule. It's a fiduciary duty, I think, as Bob has said. Mac, as you said, there's some that really get it. May take a while for them to understand, but they do. But not everybody, clearly not everyone's doing it, because if we're having the number of breaches that we are today, something really needs to change, right? Something needs to change in how we're going about our security program or risk management program. And there have been many people that have said this. I think it's been called out by members of our government agencies, our elected officials, even our administration. And there have been a few initiatives on that note, including the National Security or Cybersecurity Strategy, the National Cybersecurity Implementation Plan for Critical Infrastructure, not specific to healthcare, but of course would include healthcare in that group of industries. And that particular plan and that strategy talks about incentives, and it talks about new regulations. And there's been a lot of discussion on that in the industry about what that actually means. So we'd love to get your thoughts on that. Bob, is help coming from the government? Are more regulations coming, or do you just see a lot more status quo?
There are more regulations coming. And if we step outside of healthcare for a moment, just think about the sectoral approach that we've taken in the United States. We have healthcare doing something, we have financial services doing something. Obviously, we have entities here in the U.S. that are subject to international regulations like GDPR, and not to mention the states and in some cases, local entities. It's a mess. For me, whatever happens, there has to be some harmonization among these various regulations that are coming out. And just think about in healthcare for a long time, when it comes to grief reporting, without undue delay, and in no case greater than 60 days. Well, rationalize or reconcile that with New York Department of Financial Services, 72 hours. GDPR, 72 hours. Proposed in CERCEA when it comes to a breach or an event, material event reporting, 72 hours, but when it comes to ransomware, 24 hours. And then we have in the defense industrial base, when it comes to DFARS and CMMC, 72 hours. National Trade Union, 72. I mean, these things are diverse all over the map when it comes to, so whatever happens from a regulatory effort, there needs to be a lot more work on harmonizing the direction we head. Something like a GDPR.
What do you think, Mac, in terms of standardization and where we're heading with the industry?
I mean, as a guy who played that game for over 20 years, the biggest problem with waiting on the government, and that's literally what you're doing, you're waiting on the government, is it takes a tremendous amount of lifting to get that kind of coordination. We used to have a rule when I was in defense, when we wanted to do something different or do something new, and it was going to take regulation or it was going to take, even just a defense directive. We used to say it'll take 18 to 36 months to get everybody to agree to it and another 36 months to actually get it through. So hopefully you're going to be here for 6 years. So if you were a political appointee, you probably never saw it happen. For those who were career, I mean, literally you'd start something and it would be 3, 4, 5 years down the road before you would actually see it. I mean, just take the recent example of CMMC. I mean, they started talking about CMMC over 5 years ago. It is just this year beginning to really happen because so many things have to happen in the federal government before regulation can actually occur and be enforceable. Bob knows this. This is a joke between the two of us, I think, and a lot of other old timers. We're sitting here with a HIPAA security rule that's 20 years old, over 20 years old, and it has never gone through a change. And every other security regulation or security standard on the books has been through at least 4 or 5 major revisions in that same time frame. You know, this it almost begs the question, are we really serious about this?
Yeah.
Because you can't say that the thing that you use to hold an industry accountable is a 20-plus-year-old standard that doesn't even represent today's environment, right? But that's what we've got. You know, there's been a lot of great work done by the 405D. I applaud those guys. They work hard. They're motivated. They're trying. And yet, many of the things that they've come up with or that they recommended, again, several years ago, those are still not hardcore requirements. Right. And we see this over and over again. Look at medical devices. We've been at that for more than a decade. We're still no closer to having a secure medical device environment than we were a decade ago. Part of it is because there is so much friction in the government. There are people who don't want to do it for various reasons and or it's costly or it's this or it's that. So if you're waiting on the government to fix a problem, you're going to be retired before that happens. And if you're running a business, you better not be waiting on the government to solve your problem for you. And I think that's why I keep coming back to this. It's a business imperative. If you care about your business, if you care about your customers, in this case, your patients, then you have to do what's right to protect your environment, to be able to deliver services when they need it.
Great thoughts. Great. Thank you, both of you, Mac and Bob, for all your insights. Most importantly, for everything you've contributed to cybersecurity, to our healthcare industry. I think we're very grateful for all of that contribution and for having you here to provide some of your thoughts and wisdom. So thanks again very much.
Good seeing you, Steve. Bob, as always.
Mac, yes, always a pleasure. I was looking through some notes. You and I used to do this thing I put together called the HIPAA High-Tech Blue Ribbon Panel.
Yeah.
I think the last time we did it was 2012, so it's been a little while. We'll do this again sometime.
Take care, everybody.
Thank you for joining us today on the Clear Perspective podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode and gained valuable insights.